I get to invite a group of people this morning to join me at this time. The team that made up our Honduras missions group is going to come, and they are ready, set, move. All right? If you were in a foreign country south of Mexico, Central America, Honduran team, you are now getting a look at this group, and today our plan is very simple. It's to inspire. In fact, here comes Kevin with a refill for me. Oh, all righty. We're actually serious about it this morning. This is Honduran coffee, and of course, this is a hammock, and it's not exactly how I like to lay in a hammock, but it's meant to be a little prop to get your attention. We'll hold it up in a little bit, but this morning we want to tell you about our experience. Honduras is a very sort of a household name around here. You have either gone on a trip or prayed for people who have gone on a trip or paid for them to go on a trip. Maybe all of the above in many cases. And this morning you'll notice a couple of seats empty. One is Kelly. You'll see, can you circle Kelly up there so they know, Dan, you got the pointer behind you. They won't see it. It's clear at the top.
Oh, I gotcha.
You got it? That's Kelly, and Kelly's out of town. And then next to Kelly is John Leonard, who is the father of Justin, who suffered the accident this week we just prayed for. And many have supported them through this very trying time. He was the young man in Tualatin, if you hadn't made the connection, who was struck by a train, the commuter train. And so we have gone from life flight situation and tremendous trauma to God, miracle after miracles, and we'll tell you more, and John will in weeks to come. Of first of all, you don't encounter a train and survive. And not only did that happen, miracle one, but miracle two is he survived it without sustaining any injury to major organs, it appears, brain and heart and lung, but he's pretty torn up. He suffered a partial amputation of one of his feet in it. But anyway, that's John Leonard, and John almost is smiling that big today, maybe even bigger because of what God's done to care for him and his family and, of course, his son through this trial. And who else am I missing up there? Yeah, Jen, of course, Jen Adams, Kevin's daughter, and she's out of town as well. This morning, not able to be with us. So other than that, and over on the side, you see, of course, the Wiggs family. That's Brian and Natasha and Michael and Brian James. So they are there and continue to be there. In fact, I'll just give you a little tip. We're being eavesdropped this morning. They are part of our gathering this morning by Skype. So they're watching us. And good morning, Wiggs. And hey, let's give it up for the Wiggs. Let's have a big love and hello. We love you. Our purpose today is twofold. One is we want to give you a report and thanks, appreciation for a sense of how your investment in prayer and financial support has paid off, the results of that, and they are extensive. The second is to challenge you to further consider your part in what is now a multiple year partnership that we have with Honduras. We have boots on the ground, as the saying goes. We have missionaries in two parts of the country. They continue a very strong ministry. They are very connected to us philosophically and spiritually, that the work they continue to do is not just for them to do, and we pay for them to do it, and we pray for them as they do it, but it's deeper than that, and these who stand or sit here this morning are just the latest sort of wave of folks from Grace Point who have gone down and plugged right in and taken part in this ministry. And our challenge is nothing short this morning of trying to inspire you to say, Lord, is it possible you could actually have plans for me to take part in this as well? And there will be plenty of opportunities. So let's get started. On July 10th, just after midnight, we boarded a team, a bus this team did, and boarded a plane, rather. I'm getting ahead of myself. We boarded a plane in Portland and flew to Houston, where we caught another flight to Tegucigalpa. And we then were met that morning by a sort of a van bus, let's call it. It's sort of a van on steroids. You'll see it in a minute. It seats 30. And we made our way to a very remote part of Honduras, a place called Gracias. Might ring a bell for some of you because you know Victor and Vigilia Almendares, our missionary family, who live there in Gracias, and they are hard, just deeply committed, passionate people for planting churches. And the plan was with our team and the Micah boys that we met back in Tegucigalpa at the airport, we would go there and spend a week in building a church in the mountains, in the jungles of Honduras. Yet another church. We've done this before. This was just further up a mountain road to another village. So after traveling nearly 24 hours, tired would be an understatement, from traveling, but motivated in a big way for ministry, we went to bed briefly and woke the next morning, Monday morning, to board this bus and head up to the mountains and begin our ministry of partnering with them to build this church. And Kevin Adams is going to take it from there. You're seeing pictures right here of
So we showed up Monday morning up on the mountain. This wood that you see in the picture right here was milled right on site. So what happened is they bought a tree, I think, locally, an old-growth yellow pine, and some guy was up there with a 24-inch chainsaw hand-cutting dimensional lumber. We showed up there, and the walls were partially built with cinder blocks or concrete blocks that they pour some stuff on the ground and hand-mix the mortar right there on the dirt, put it in buckets and bring it up there, and they hod the bricks together, hand-form wrought iron and rebar to hold these walls together, build hand forms right there on site. We showed up on Monday looking for electricity. Electricity, I think, was 5 miles down the road from us. So this wood is held together in forms with, they would drill holes through the wood and then tie it together with tie wire. And for those that you don't know, this is a brace and bit. This is similar to what they were using, and it takes about 5 minutes to drill a hole in that wood. We went over to a box and we pulled out some drills, and they go, practical. So we sped up the work on some of the stuff that was going on, but without an army of guys to do the work, this project would have gone on a long time. But we had 30-some people up on the mountain along with their workers. This wall you see here of dirt was hand-hewn out of the mountain by the locals to start the church, and when we got there, we had to dig out twice as much as what they had started on by hand and shovel and pick and axe. So it would be a place to walk up to the church door to go into the church and a place for people to gather, put their bicycles and that kind of stuff, because when they get to church, that's what they do. But it was a long process. We got a lot of good stuff out of it. We learned a lot of stuff. So when we started building trusses on Wednesday, I think it was, out of that hand-milled lumber up on the mountain, I didn't know how we were going to do it because we had a skill saw but no electricity. So I show up there and they have a chainsaw. And so they hand cut some very finite work up on the mountain to get these trusses to bolt together, drill them, nail them, pin them and everything, and put trusses on this building by the time we were done. But when we left, trusses were up and they were getting ready to sheet the roof.
It's terrific. And while this was going on during that week, a group from the team would make their way down the hill about a mile or a little bit further to Vacation Bible School. It was actually a public school, and I think Nancy Brennan's going to kind of give us a little sense of what happened there.
Yeah, you know, if you've ever been involved in a Vacation Bible School program, I'm sure many of you have, when you hear that term, Vacation Bible School, you have probably pictures that come to your mind of what you've experienced and what's kind of the normal part of a VBS. I'm sure you're thinking games and Bible stories and maybe snacks and lots of children, very excited, games, you know, outside area, inside area. So we kind of packed up all those ideas and took them 3,000 miles away and knew we were going to have to modify. We talked about that quite a bit before we left. But modify would be an understatement. We were major modifying. But we took all those things with us and set out at this school to do our little VBS program. And like you saw on the slide, it's a public school. So that was very different. We had two pastors in our public school sharing the gospel and doing other various things. And, you know, the things that looked different, even though there were similarities, of course, the things that were so different from what we would be used to doing here, of course, the first thing would be the language barrier. I mean, we spoke English, they spoke Spanish. And so you try to communicate the gospel to them when there's this language barrier. And Kelly Hurst is fluent in Spanish, so she was able to do the Bible story you see right there in Spanish. So that was incredibly helpful. As you see, the children were glued to her. They were just very attentive, very polite, just very sweet. Even though, you know, most of us could not communicate with them, it really didn't matter. It makes it a little more complicated, and you do kind of a lot of hand motions and all of that. But there's a definite connection. It takes a little time to build, but there's a definite connection. And we were able to do games, and that area, it was a single classroom, and that's what we had to work with as far as inside. And so they would just spread the desks out to the edge, and we were able to do Duck Duck Goose is really the thing we did inside, Paco Paco Gonzo. And then there was a very small outside area, probably about 5 feet wide or so, next to the school of dirt slash mud, certainly by the middle of the week. And that was the outdoor area. So we had to think linear and did some red light, green light, and things like that, and had our Bible story. And we had Pastor Victor was with us. So he did some little interpreting and kind of summarizing the point so that it was sure to communicate to them the message that we were trying to portray to them. We had puppets, and we had some real modification there because of the no electricity part, and we didn't have proper batteries until partway through the second day. And I have no idea who it was. Somebody showed up at the door with the proper batteries. So it was like, okay, so modify. We'll do it at the end rather than where we thought we were going to do it. But we were able to, since we had Pastor Victor, he was able to read a couple of Bible stories out of his Spanish Bible. And the Mitch and Michael Wiggs enacted it with the puppets behind him. So that was fabulous. I mean, it was just a constant, okay, Lord, this is not what we thought. What can we do to still get across what we want to get across? So it was a great experience. And of course, no electricity, no plumbing. Very different than what we're used to. And one last thing is this, hold yours up. We use the wordless book for our theme kind of throughout. And what it is, it's different colors, and they each correspond with a scripture, and it tells the gospel message. And that was a part of the Bible story that Kelly read that was woven in there. And we were all wearing them, so the children were very curious. And we tried to communicate with them that by the end, they would all receive one. And so at the end of the last day, we handed them out. And by that time, they were very familiar with what it meant. And the prayer was they would share that with the other children in the village because they weren't all at the school. Mm. And that was also, Steve had a little cube that was sort of a little magic trick, but each side of the cube had one of the colors. And so he used that as well to explain. And Pastor Victor reinforced it, so it was, they were very familiar with it. And the children that weren't at the school on that last day, that so they didn't get one, they were very curious, and they were all kind of grouped down at the end of the street, and I was able to take some extra ones up to them that afternoon and hand them out as well. So it was a fabulous experience. And I think the thing that those of us who were there, I think we would all say we walked away knowing that, you know, even though it looked very different, Vacation Bible School here and Vacation Bible School in an extremely remote village in Honduras, the God of that VBS and the God of our VBS is the same God. Amen. And that message is across any kind of language or cultural or physical barrier that there is. So it was really a privilege to have that experience.
One of the, as Steve mentioned earlier, we were able to connect a couple of different areas that we, as Steve used the words, have boots on the ground. We connected not only Victor, but connected him with the MICA project as well. We've got a picture here with Ed and Seth with Victor at a festival we'd gone to after a church one evening. But again, just having the chance to reconnect with Victor and have him be so much a part. There's Victor. One, he made the arrangements for us to get up onto the work site and made our arrangements for us in Gracias, where we will stay and had that place to go back to rest each night. And again, Victor played a part in there as far as making the arrangements for us to get into the school and again to continue to communicate the gospel to the children that we were reaching there. And we also got a chance to go to the church in Gracias for a Wednesday night service. And two of the MICA boys, Wilmer and Hector, got a chance to do some of their raps around their change in their lives since coming to Christ. Mitch getting a chance to participate with them as well, laying down a beat. And then later on in the evening, Victor's introducing Steve, and Steve got to share a message with the folks there. Again, we mentioned this was a connecting time for MICA and for Victor. We had we met the MICA boys as well as some of the guys from the vocational school who joined us on the work site, and they just got to it right away. No matter the age, no matter the level, they were tireless workers. They picked up skills that they hadn't done before and were just a huge part of the time. And it was amazing to be part of that. To go with the MICA boys on their first mission trip in country. It was tremendous. We were treated so hospitably by the local church there. Every day about noon, we'd walk about a quarter mile down this little, really single-lane road, those further past church, went to this home, and got to enjoy a meal there each day, get a break away from the time. Meal there. We just settled down somewhere out in the courtyard, wherever you could find a spot, in amongst the laundry, in amongst the chickens, the dogs that were fighting back and forth for little scraps that might have fallen off. And again, all cooked for us on a wood-fired stove. And to do that each day, a group of women would get up early and begin preparing and be ready for us at noon, and to have that time there. And then not only would they do that, but late in the middle of the afternoon, they would bring back some of that delicious Honduran coffee and along with some rolls that they had made, and to bring us to its work site to just give us that little boost to get through the end of the day. And they call these donuts. They are wonderful. And I think Ed's got the recipe and is willing to share for a price, I think. But we were just so cared for by the local church. And again, I don't downplay this at all. Thank you so much, hugely, for your prayers for our safety. Going into this thing, you just can't begin to understand exactly what you'll be facing. I'd never done anything quite like this before. But again, I'll just run through a couple of situations. First of all, you see us walking behind the bus. There's a reason for that. It had rained heavily on the mountain that day. It's dirt. It's very rugged territory. Our bus driver felt it was not safe for us to be on the bus as he took it down a very, very steep downgrade. So we walked about three quarters of a mile down the hill, because earlier, where it wasn't as steep, we were still slipping and sliding, going around the corners. So, you know, our safety was there. One day going back up the mountain after a night of rain, couldn't make that corner. It was just too muddy. And so to keep it on the road, as he backed down around the corner to a flat spot, we're there trying to keep it on the road, pushing it back around. By the end of the day, it had dried out enough that they were able to get us, he was able to get back up to the work site. From that spot, we probably shuttled, 5 or 6 miles in the backs of pickup trucks. And those that didn't have a ride walked until the ride came back to meet them. So we're, you know, walking through the muddy trails there. I've never seen so many openly carried weapons in my entire life. Any business you go to, this is a gas station. There's a guy, there's an armed guard there carrying a shotgun. And it's happening pointed.
Show him the gun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
aimed at you.
Yeah, right, it's now. Right,
yeah,
there. It's aimed at you. Yeah. Didn't learn the, you know, gun safety very well here. And literally, delivery trucks would be going around, and there would truly be someone riding shotgun with the delivery truck driver. Just saw a delivery being made across the street at a little store across from the Mike house, and there was an armed guard standing outside as the Coca-Cola is being taken into the store. So again, I guess there's a reason for, you know, the weapons, and thankfully we didn't see anything come to that. But again, thank you for your prayers for our safety. I think I've got one more. Yeah. This is the leadership house where the older students live, and you'll see that it's everything. Every opening is barred. The tops of the parapets up here are covered with razor wire, and you'll see the same thing at the Micah house. The tops of the parapets are all razor wired as well. And again, there is such a concern for safety, and that's very common to see in the neighborhood and actually throughout other parts of Honduras as well. So again, thank you for your prayers for our safety in that regard. For our health, Steve had definitely had a down day. Mitch had a down day, but it could have been much, much worse. There was an outbreak of dengue fever in the country at that time, so much so that the State Department put out a travel bulletin warning about traveling to Honduras during that time. One of the Micah boys was severely ill with it, and you got that in your prayer chain requests. And marvelously, miraculously, healed in a few days. You can tell there was anything the matter with it, but a very serious situation. So again, thank you for your prayers for that. After a week in Lagunitas, out outside of Gracias, we traveled back to Tegucigalpa and got involved with the ministry with Micah. And the first thing was Night Strike, something translated from, or transported from Bridgetown, that concept from Bridgetown, down to Tegucigalpa. And we opened the Night Strike with a game of soccer, followed by a talk, and Brian Nelson.
That's me.
That's you, buddy.
Yeah, man, this was a, this was, you know, one of many moments of my, you know, my time there, and I'll tell you the rest of the stories, but tonight, I'm going to tell you about a 10.0 earthquake moment with God. And I make that reference in regards to, you know, the Jonathan, and hey, let's go pick a fight with the Philistines and see if God delivers them. And after he did, you know, he had an earthquake, you know. So, all right, God was there, you know. And so my whole trip in Honduras is seeing these earthquake moments of seeing, you know, all right, Brian, you're in the right battlefield. And so I decided, you know, hey, let's pick a fight with the adversary, and I'll throw overhand right, give a message, and they strike. Well, that wasn't my plan. It was a plan as if I was playing soccer, and Mr. Brian Wiggs, who's hearing me right now, says, hey, Brian, you want to give a message? Says, nah, this is like 10 minutes before the soccer field's done and, you know, have to get ready. So I'm all freaking out. I'm like, okay, well, how could I get a message? Can I go find a quiet spot? Well, in Honduras, in Tegucigalpa, at a cancha, a soccer field, you're not going to find a quiet spot or a nice little prayer room to pray and prepare, you know. It's not there. So as I'm, you know, doing little prayer walks and talking to myself and saying, all right, God, you know, help me out, come on, you know, I need to go pick a fight with these Philistines, and let's go, all right, so I'm all praying, and so I think, oh, okay, here's this little idea of a gift popped in my head. Like, oh, yeah, well, a gift is pretty transcendent for all cultures. Everybody can understand a gift, you know, something that somebody gives you for free, and you open it up, and it's all, you know, who knows what it'll be in it. So I was like, okay, I'll make my premise is, you know, is this gift. So, so I was like, okay, cool, I got it. And I was like, all right, God, you know, help me out, come on, you know, give me some words, please. I'm like, tired playing soccer. And, you know, this is, granted, this is like, right, Nice Strike was after like 8-hour drive from the mountains to Taegu's, and then we just, you know, hit the ground running in Taegu. And so as I'm getting ready and, you know, the soccer field closed, and all right, well, I guess it's my cue. So I get up and so I'll kind of give you a nutshell of my message and per se. And so I was, okay, I was like, well, you know, I just start, you know, the introductions, you know, hi, you know, I'm Brian, you know, and I was like, I'm here to tell you guys something. I'm here to tell you about a gift. And this gift is for everybody. And this gift, you know, it won't make you richer, won't make you more handsome, more pretty, more popular, more stronger, more richer, et cetera, et cetera. It won't make you this, but it will change your life and your heart forever. And so I just kind of went on that little thing, and I said, yeah, you know, in this gift, because it was for everybody, it's not wrapped in pretty paper, you know, with a bow tie and all that. It's wrapped in a cloth of blood. And I said, you know, and this gift, I accepted this gift when I was in jail. And this gift, I ended up saying, this, you know, kind of, this gift is Jesus Christ. It's his blood that allows this gift for everybody. And I was making the point that, you know, don't let anybody tell you you're not worthy of it. Don't let anybody tell you, hey, you know, I have to shape up, or I have to, you know, stop doing this, I have to, you know, do this, or I have to. Because to the street kids, they're the bottom of society. They're the lepers. They're the ones who people just pass by and pass off as garbage, and so their whole lives are being shown that they're nothing. And so within that society, within that culture, you know, if you feel like you're nothing, then if somebody comes along and tells you, hey, there's this, you know, gift of Jesus Christ and it'll change your life forever, they're like, oh, I don't deserve that. And that was my point of reiterating that to them. No, you know, we've all been given this gift, and we're all nothing without Christ. And so I just kind of, you know, begged with them, and at the end I said, I plead with you. I accepted this gift, and this gift has now changed my life because I took this gift to Jesus Christ, and that he has changed my life, and I'm here in Honduras to talk to you guys right now. And I tell you what, you know, there was like 8 or 9 guys who were just glued into me. Sorry for the, yeah, they were just, they were just so like, you know, and so I just was like, all right, you know, just, I plead, you know, take this gift, and your life will never be the same, you know, in the now and in the next. And after that, I was just like, this moment of, whoa, God, did you just do that? And I just had this surreal experience of, you know, it was like a cloud 9 experience of, I overhand right to the adversary, and God delivered. So that was just such an amazing, amazing moment. And with the whole Night Strike, it was just perfect. And that was like my one story. So if you want to hear more, I don't think they'll give me my own Sunday. So you can talk to me at Cafe.
Okay, and Denise, you were going to share about the rest of Night Strike.
Right, as Dan said, we had just come off the mountain, and I call it going from our mountaintop experience down into the valley. And so Night Strike was our introduction into the valley. And as you can see there in the background, the soccer field is not like what we're used to seeing here in the States as a soccer field. For those of you that play soccer, it looks more like an indoor soccer course in terms of size. And it's fenced in and not in a particularly nice part of the neighborhood. But Micah runs out the space on an hourly basis every Friday night for the street kids to come. And Micah staff and Micah kids participate in the game with the street kids and play for an hour. And after that hour, they hear the message that Brian gave. After listening to the message, then food is made available for them. Natasha Wiggs is usually the one responsible for bringing the food and preparing the food. And the Micah staff helps serve the food. So the kids get in line I say kids, there are also some that are older than teenagers. They're in their 20s. I was actually engaged in talking with a woman who was in her late 20s, and really she looked much older, much older. It's just the impact of living on the streets and just their lifestyle that just ages them so quickly. But she had a couple of little kids, so I was spending time with her, and so it was nice to hear Brian's message, because I didn't actually get to hear him when he was giving that. But anyway, the kids get in line after the message, and they're served food. And what typically is happening, they get their food. The minute they get the food, they're stuffing it into their mouth, and they immediately go to the back of the line so they can be served again. They keep serving the food until the food runs out. And then after they eat, then the foot washing is made available to them if they want. What I forgot to mention is that when they first arrive, they have to check their glue bottles in with Brian. He puts them in a container and then locks them in the car. And when they're finished, they can get their glue bottle back. He puts their name on it. And right here it shows them they're getting their glue bottles back. But they can't stay on the premises, is my understanding. Once they get their glue bottles back, they have to leave. So the whole idea behind the Night Strike is interacting and developing relationships with these kids that are lasting. It's about building trust, and reference will be made later to Pastor Johnny, who does the dump ministry, but one of the things that he was talking to us about was the fact that, you know, you really have to address the needs, the physical needs of people before you can really touch their spirit. If they're not being fed, they're not being clothed, how can you really talk to them about Jesus if you're not really showing them that love with skin on? So that's basically where Night Strike starts. And a lot of the kids that are in the MICA project have actually come out of this street life that you see here. So it's what Brian has done, what Michael Miller has done to really live the life of Christ for these kids. And, you know, it's just a blessing to see the results of that.
I would just add, let me just throw in, you know, when Denise, you said that it's in not so nice a part of town, you heard a little chuckle here, because you cannot imagine how awful this setting is. You know, behind us, I stood there just kind of stunned watching dogs and pigs fight for the same food people were fighting for in a kind of a makeshift, be like at the end of your street or something. People just chose to use that as a place to discard their junk, their big trash bags of food, and the pigs and dogs are, I mean, this one big fat pig just kept biting the ears of dogs, and it was just, and I'm looking at that, and he's sharing about this gift, and she's loving on these little babies, and we got all this glue being, you know, checked in, and then checked back out again, and you just kind of, there were moments when you wanted to scream. You thought, you know, devil, is this the best you can do? Because, you know, we've got something. We know someone who's got something. Jesus, who can change everything here. And so you're in that setting. I mean, this is just like, and it's wrenching. You're watching it happen, and yet you're seeing progress. You're seeing people. Some of the very boys you're going to hear about now, the MICA boys, came out of that. So,
in all the years that we've had connections with MICA, I had never actually seen, you know, pictures. At least I don't recall seeing pictures of the outside or the inside. And so I want to share some of that with you here, and about life and worship at MICA. From the street, this is where you enter MICA. The structure's on top. Doug and Tony and John sure recognize those. That's the start of the vocational school. The area is covered for welding up on top of the roof. And we got there actually in an evening. This was a picture later. We got there in an evening, and the very first thing, well, for a picture with boys, okay, forgot that was in there. But again, the guys just, you know, love to take pictures and love to get, it was just wonderful getting a chance to be with all of them. But the very first thing we showed up there, it was already evening. This courtyard is so multi-purpose. It serves for an eating area, a play area, and John just picked up with some of the other guys there, and they started, you know, into an impromptu soccer game right away. You've seen the city. You've seen the areas that are surrounding Micah. And so weekly, they take opportunities to get the guys out into the country and do some healthy activities. And this particular time, we were able to go out to a space where they can ride horses, they can run, they can play, just have a marvelous time. And again, getting to interact with the guys and getting to love on them and share a time with them as well. Adventurous kinds of things, things you certainly wouldn't have a chance to do in the city. And again, as I said, that courtyard is multi-purpose. This is their rainy season, so it's like, thankfully, you can get everybody outside to eat in the courtyard. And one of the meals we shared there, and Daisy does some housekeeping for the Wigs, but also does some cooking there on Micah, and just does an incredible job with, you know, very minimal facilities there to cook with. You know, the guys just having fun mugging for us on the camera. And we also go into a, they also have quite a bit of focus on worship and community there. Some of the younger guys getting, again, do some rapping about what their lives were before Christ and what they are now. And eventually, Seth got a chance to be up there. And Seth, take us through some of the things there.
The Mike boys really had a big impact on me. They really changed my life. Like, we didn't speak the same language in school. I'm in French class, so this was different.
How'd that work out?
But by the end, I'd learned a little bit of Spanish, and we were able to barely communicate. And next to me up there is Wilmer, and he was probably the one that had the biggest impact on me. He pretty much from the get-go befriended me, and we were like best friends by the end of the trip. And I remember one day on the van bus thing, I asked him if he considered me a brother, and he said he did, and that really, like, it really touched my heart. And there was just kind of an immediate bond with us, because we both do music, and we were both Christian, and that just really was a brotherhood with us. And the rest of the Michael boys and I bonded really well after that, and it was just such a great experience. I didn't want to leave on the last night there. I broke down and was in tears for the last little while on the last night we were in the Micah house, just because I knew that was the last time I was going to be there for a long time. But I realized while I was there that although we didn't speak the same language, with God in our lives, we could connect and communicate. So that was my time there. Relationships really built me up as a person.
The group you see gathered here is actually an extended worship community. Every Sunday night, the entire worship, the entire community of Micah, the boys that are currently living in the house, the guys who have moved on and are now living at leadership, former Micah boys who have possibly left the country for education, who may be back in the area, guys who have moved on out of Micah and are living independently, they still come back together as community on Sunday nights for a time of worship. And just the encouragement that takes place there during that time, the younger guys who've just come off the streets or in that process of you know, beginning an education, kindergarten, first, second, third grade, when you're 11, 12, 13 years old, and to see these guys who are coming back who have walked those steps and the encouragement that takes place there. And the goal setting and striving there, and again walking with the Lord, showing younger brothers how to walk with the Lord, and just having that time to be part of that was great. And Steve got a chance to share that night as well in a message. So again, that whole time of coming back together as community is really, really powerful. While we were there, we also completed several projects, and both at the Micah and Timothy houses. And Ed, why don't you go ahead and share with us what took place at the Micah house?
Okay. The
the picture makes it look like you got a hat on your head or something.
Yeah. Well, my hat is right here. When I went, and you've heard from everybody else, the Micah project, and I went with that in mind, but when we got to the Micah house, I came up with two projects. One was to repair some cracks and so it could be painted, but I had some good help. Nancy helped with the cracks, and Seth, and Denise helped. She did a lot of the patching in the courtyard. It's kind of hard to tell much about it, but I guess I was talked to a little bit. I don't think anyone knows, but we were getting close to the end, and they were out of material to do the patching. We still had a lot of cracks to do, and I guess I kind of get wound up in doing that because that's what I've done. But then I realized, and I think God was trying to tell me, that our main project, yeah, the building needs maintenance, but the main reason you're here is to minister to the kids and to the people. And so I guess that was my aha moment, or uh-oh moment. I had to stop and think. And so God got to me on that one. But we did get quite a bit done.
I love the continuation that this team finished all the prep work so that the next group coming down, other supporters of the Whigs, River West, came down and were able to paint the courtyard and paint the interior and to build on what had been prepared for them. So I love that, again, great numbers of believers coming together to support. And Kevin.
So about 4 or 5 blocks away from the Micah house is Timothy house, and that's where the leadership stays. That's where some of the older guys stay, that and staff members for Micah house. And so we had a couple projects there. This project right here was to pull up some loose tiles that had broken loose from above the cistern. So where they're kneeling, just below that, is storage of water that they use in the house when the city water is turned off. And then to the back of them is a little garden area where they totally removed a brick wall around there, pulled out all the dirt and everything else. And what they're going to build in there is a 2-story structure to where they can have a weightlifting area, a place for some musical instruments so they can play musical instruments, and kind of hang out with a little bit more room for the guys at the Timothy house going forward. So I think the River West people were going to start that project right behind us.
And they got the slab poured.
Oh, they did. They got the slab poured. So that's pretty awesome, you know, the teams come in there and equip these guys so that they can go out and do the hard work, which is working with the Micah boys and working at the street ministry and that kind of stuff, and then have a place to hang out in the back when they come back to the house. The other part of the project was to take off this red sheet metal, which was mortared into the parapet wall in the end, and pull all this sheet metal off the roof. When we got there, we found out that the roof was hot, which means that there was electricity in the metal. So we wore gloves and that kind of stuff, and you can kind of see the modern wiring system on the ceiling. So we pulled off all the metal, sheet metal that was on this roof, and brought in new metal here. My daughter's helping lower the stuff down into the courtyard. This metal here, which actually was in bad shape, was going to somebody else's house to really replace a really, really, really bad roof with this that would help them out. So over the course of a couple days, we peeled off all that old roofing, tried to find out where the electrical wiring was touching the metal, and then put all new roofing on top of this roof. There you can see the new roofing on the left and the old roofing on the right. And then, like Ed was saying, you know, we realized that the thing we were there for was to really surround these guys, support them, but love on them also. So I determined in the beginning that I wasn't going to get up on the roof and work. Yeah. and kind of teach these guys how to put a roof on. None of them had run guns before. None of them had done this kind of work before. And by the end of the second day, they were running back and forth, putting this roof on and learning how to bolt this thing down correctly to make it watertight and run. This guy that's got his back to you, his name is Luis. He's the local guard for Micah and for Timothy. And this guy was light on his feet. Let me tell you, he probably weighs 240, 250. Yeah. And he would just run back and forth across that roof without bending in the roof, because I showed him where to walk, you know, all that kind of stuff. But these guys were terrific. So when we finished up, we had pretty much a watertight roof, about 95% done. Told River West what they needed to do when they got back there to finish this thing up. But we never did find out where the electricity was coming from. So when we left, this thing was hot again, unfortunately.
On our last full day, we were taken to a number of different sites. We called it Vision Day. The first place we went to was Offay House, Amor, Fe, Esperanza, Love, Faith, and Hope. And Pastor Johnny, who I've heard of this man a number of times, but again, he was sharing with us, you know, the roots of Offay. Really, he was challenged by his 5-year-old daughter about starting a school for kids in the dump. And that happened for a couple of years in the dump until the government said, you can't do this in the dump. So they moved to public land across the road and ran school under a couple of different trees for different grades. And then people started coming out, and we want to build things for you. And this school has come about just several hundred yards away from the dump. Four children who live in the dump, whose families live and work in the dump. And our team is just heading for one of the classrooms to take a look around. But I've heard about this miracle well, and there it is standing on the left. There's solar panels above there to help run the pump. But I hear about this, and it really didn't strike me until I was there. The water in there is pure. Pure water? Okay, great. Well, the neighbor's well has hepatitis and has malaria in it. The dump sits a couple of hundred yards away from here, uphill. Well, water tends to travel down here, but yet their water is pure. It does not need to be treated. It is pure, 25 gallons a minute, supplied not only for the needs of the school, but they also supply the needs of the community, people who come there. That's a miracle. It's just an unbelievable miracle. Johnny taking us through various aspects of the school. The older students are wearing uniforms. They also start to have a co-op, and a number of the girls are making jewelry so that they can provide an income for their family and they don't have to go back to work in the dump. There's a benefactor from Microsoft who not only helps provide software and hardware, but actually comes down to teach computer skills. And students are going from a goal of wanting to be the person who drives the dump truck or directs traffic in the dump to having, you know, much higher professional goals in terms of how they can come back and serve in their country. This baby hopefully will never have to live or work in the dump. This baby, the mom of this child is working in the dump, but she doesn't have to take him around in a cardboard box with her during the work day in the dump. And one of the dreams is that the dump will be shut down, a recycling center will be made out, and the people who are living and working there can work the recycling center, and these children won't have to work like this in the dump anymore.
All right, so this is a picture of the dump. It sits down in a bowl in the mountains, and this is a picture from Offay of all the vultures that like to live there and eat the food there, which is kind of disgusting. So as we drove, we waited hours, and as we drove in to the dump, you see people scrounging in the dump, looking for food, looking for bottles that they can sell, and you know, most of the families, they make enough money to get one lousy meal of beans and rice and tortillas at night for the whole day. And the next day they do the same thing. Every day of the year, they never stop. I mean, they live there, they work here, everything. You know, you walk around and you go from a place of love, hope, and faith to a place with no hope, no faith, and very little love. And it's eye-opening. It really is. It will definitely change the way you look on everything we do here. and the poverty there, I mean, it's crazy. It's over the top. And we saw a couple kids from Afe that live in the dump in their dump clothes that have changed out of their uniforms. And it's just, there's not many words that could describe it. You just kind of got to see it for yourself. And the pictures can only show you so much.
From the dump, we went to Villa Linda Miller. This is not Villa Linda Miller, but this is a home in Tegucigalpa that's still suffering, the damage is still evident from Hurricane Mitch in 1998. It's just been left there, never repaired. The people who live in Villa Linda Miller used to live in this flat area along here by the river. There, where they lived was totally, completely wiped out, washed out by the floods that came along with the hurricane. Michael Miller met members of this community as they were taking refuge in a local church, and ultimately plans came about to develop a community that they all took part in. 165 homes were built basically by the families that all lived there, helping neighbor. We're taking a walk through Villa Linda Miller at this time here, and just getting a vision of what God accomplished through that vision here, just a little upper view from the top of the water tank there. Brian's down there taking pictures again. Brian's always got his camera, and then again, Brian's known in the community, and he makes friends with kids everywhere. And then Kelly was our local kid magnet, always had kids in tow there as well. But again, just amazing to see what God has done and continues to do there. And then after lunch there, Brian took us to a place. We went back into town. We parked on the far side of the river. We gathered up some food and some water that had been put together, and we took a walk across the bridge. And we began walking through a market, and we took a sharp right-hand turn and began walking down this alley. And it wasn't just down the alley physically in terms of a hill, but you just saw life take a real downturn here. We're walking past shoe repair places where the glue becomes available, and you run into people just down there keeping numb on the glue, and life takes place. At the end of the street is just that people just dump the refuse of everything, and the glue is there, and people are living down there. And again, the Micah boys came from this. Wilmer, who Seth was talking about, came from this, and God is using him. God has touched him in such an amazing way. He's come from this. Steve was sharing a message a long time ago that I remember is, without Christ, person may not be as bad as they can be, but they are as bad off as they can be. The spiritual condition inside is as bad off as you can be without Christ. And this just kind of gives a visual outside look at that. But again, the spiritual condition that you see here in this area is the same as our neighbors without Christ. The spiritual condition is the same as our neighbors without Christ. We have a lot of things we can hide behind, a lot of things that cover up, that dress it up, but still the spiritual condition is the same. And that's what I came away from this place with. Again, getting to interact and love on. Again, we saw a number of the people down here, number of people down here that we saw on this street has also been at Night Strike. So that continuing relationship is being built. And just to get a chance to love on people and just come alongside them.
Hold on, sorry. One more thing. The poverty there is, like you said, you literally, from the main marketplace, turned, and it was there. It's everywhere you look, it's there. And here, you don't see that. You go down to Bridgetown or Night Strike, and you see people that are homeless, but you do not see that out driving your car through Portland. It's not anything like here. We hide it here in America, away from everybody. We offer the homeless plane tickets to go to their families and live with their families. And there, they have no family. They have no mom and dad. They're either dead or they left them on the streets because they don't want them. because they are addicted to that glue. And the Mica Project is here, taking them in, encouraging them, lifting them up in Christ. And it's a crazy thing that is true God. It's God working.
That's right. You know, I read a book on the plane that captured some statistics that we saw in plain view, our entire experience there. One of them is that in any given 24-hour period in the world, some 30,000 people, mostly children, die of starvation. I'm sure some of these are among that number. I read one other that has bothered me ever since reading it. If you live in a home that's larger than 500 square feet, 95% of the world's population refers to your dwelling as a mansion. We saw that everywhere we went there. Now, the moment came for me that sort of brought all this home was I was standing with the team at AFE, the school across from the dump that we told you about. And I felt someone's arm around my shoulder, and it was Brian Wiggs. And he saw me trying to digest what I was seeing, the hovering vultures and such. And it was right after we had seen people desperately reaching for tortillas and water. And he quoted for me words I had shared with him years ago when he had just met Jesus and was feeling a stir to be part of something that would outlive him. With his arm around me, he quoted the words of C.T. Studd, the great missionary to China and India. He said, "Some people want to live within the sound of chapel bells, but I want to run a rescue shop near the gates of hell." And Brian said with his arm around me, he says, "Pastor, looking at this school, this is the rescue shop." And he looked, pointing now at the vultures and the dump just yards away. "And that, those are the gates of hell." And I would encourage you, you're about to see a slideshow to wrap up our morning. But I would encourage you not to just say, "Wow, I came to church and heard a lot of impactful things and interesting things." But I would encourage you this way: you do not need to go to Honduras to be near or see gates of hell. And you definitely do not need to travel anywhere to be part of the rescue plan, the shop, if you will. You and I know the rescuer, and you and I, if we have a relationship with Jesus Christ, are his chosen delivery system to take that message of rescue and hope. Many will have a chance to go to Honduras, we hope. That's our mission as a church. We want everyone to be at some point along the way in the trenches, as it were. But you know, where you live and where you and I work, and many of you where you go to school, those are gates of hell. They are. I think you said it well. Well, concealed in many cases, but there they are. But you are God's rescue plan in those places. He has said often enough to make it convincing, you and I, his followers, his children, are salt and light. And he uses another expression through the words of Paul in 2 Corinthians 2:14. We are a fragrant aroma of Jesus Christ wherever we go. And I guess I want to encourage you and me today that as we've learned some new information and seen some new pictures and are going to see some more now, that you would take with you that mission calling and be missional at school that starts a week from Tuesday, many of you. At work, that happens for most of us tomorrow. At home, that happens for all of us.
because God wants to use you right here, right now, just like he used us for that 12 days time period in Honduras. I would encourage you as you watch and see the hopeful things that God has done and is yet to do, that you will see and sense a harvest field. And maybe the prayer that it will leave you with this morning is, God, what part do you want me to play? What part, what role am I to carry out as a rescuer in the harvest field that you've called me to? Check out this video, and it'll sort of attempt to summarize it for us. Can I invite you to stand with me, and we're going to close our time in prayer. As you leave this morning, ushers will be at the back door to gather up our morning offering and our request for prayer. Maybe that song says it all, you know. Greater things, we've seen great things done, and there are greater things yet to be done. And I believe that's true. I really do. I believe it's true here, just like it's true there. God, we come to you today thankful for what we have seen and been privileged to share. It's humbling to us who have been part of this experience. Over a year ago, in some cases many, multiple years ago, you moved in our hearts to position us to be in the right place to say yes to going. There have been so much preparation that's gone into this, support raising and all those things, but spiritual preparation to ready us to see something that we would be responsible for. And I know I'm praying for the team right now that just returned, but for the others that have gone and come back and others that are still yet to go, God, I pray that you would put in our hearts a sense of privilege that we're the delivery system of your rescue plan for this world that we live in. And I know for me personally, there's a longing for the things that happened in Honduras, because no one has any doubt about their need there. God, I pray that I would not be duped by the devil in believing that there's somehow lesser need here. It's just covered up. It's concealed. So move in our hearts, God, as we go from here as sent people. Sent by you with a rescue plan into the very gates of hell that you will take us to. Until that day that you return for us, Jesus, and we pray it be soon. May we be found worthy as people, men and women and young people who walk well with you, Jesus. Because there are greater things yet to be done. All for your glory, Lord Jesus, we pray. And the sent people of God said together, amen, amen.